Everyone,
good morning.
Welcome to the first BPW meeting of the decade. We want to welcome all the legislators back to Annapolis for the start of the session. Normally, I would be down greeting them in each of the chambers today, which I do every single year. We're not being rude by having this meeting instead today, but it's simply the way the calendar works out. We're actually required by the Constitution to hold this meeting on the very same day that they open the session. It's the first time it's happened since I've been governor, and as I understand it, it's only happened twice in 20 years. So, but we have had a chance to sit down with the Senate President and the Speaker, and we're looking forward to working with them. I hope that my colleagues, Treasurer Kopp and Comptroller Franchot, and all of you here today had a wonderful time celebrating all of the holidays with your families. It's great to be back here with all of you once again as we begin 2020. And I'm so pleased that we're able to be here today to advance our transformative traffic relief plan, which will finally address the second worst traffic congestion in America and begin to solve what has been the number one problem in the Washington Capital Region for decades. With this vote, we will be moving forward on a bipartisan, common sense, interstate agreement that has eluded elected leaders throughout the region for many decades. We've been working toward this game-changing solution for the entire 5 years that I've been governor. 3.5 years ago, I stood with former Montgomery County Executive Ike Leggett when we announced our goal to address congestion on I-270 and I-495. And back in September of 2017, we announced our traffic relief plan. We then conducted an aggressive outreach effort, which included dozens of public workshops, legislative briefings, and community association meetings, going far above and beyond what would be the normal process or what has ever been done before, to provide information and to solicit input from local officials, stakeholders, and citizens. Following that, we held a public hearing last June here at the Board of Public Works, and we voted to approve the traffic relief plan. Since then, we have spent an additional 7 months meeting with Montgomery County local officials, citizen groups, and stakeholders, and have made every effort to address nearly all of their concerns. In November, after 3.5 years of effort and after months of intense negotiations with the Commonwealth of Virginia, Governor Northam and I announced an historic, once-in-a-generation interstate accord to address this regional issue by building a new state-of-the-art American Legion bridge on I-495, as well as making improvements to the beltway on both sides of the Potomac River in order to address one of the most notorious bottlenecks on the east coast of the United States. After 30 years of inaction and failure, our administration's 5 years of effort have finally paid off, and I'm very pleased that we've been successful in reaching a bipartisan regional consensus on building this critical plan, a plan which is supported by an overwhelming majority, 70% of the people in Maryland. At a time when America's roads and bridges are crumbling, and at a time of divisiveness and dysfunction in our politics today, this project is a testament to the balanced, all-inclusive approach that Maryland is taking to improving and modernizing our infrastructure. I want to thank the Comptroller for working with us throughout this process to help us reach this consensus. I also want to thank both our outgoing Transportation Secretary Pete Ron and our incoming Secretary Greg Slater for their incredible and tireless efforts. I mean, this truly is a monumental and historic achievement, not just for Maryland, but for the entire Capital Region. And I think it's very fitting that on this first day of the legislative session, that we're beginning by advancing a major bipartisan common sense agreement which will dramatically improve the quality of life every single day for hundreds of thousands of area residents and commuters for decades to come. So with that, I'll turn it over to my colleagues for any opening remarks. Comptroller Franchot.
Thank you very much, Governor, and Happy New Year to everyone. Madam Treasurer, it's good to be here. I don't have any problem with the conflict with the legislature, so I'm perfectly happy to be here. But
that's the former legislature.
Yes.
You got enough of those?
Yeah, well. So, Governor, thank you for talking about the revised item concerning the proposed traffic relief P3 plan. As a longtime resident and elected representative for many years in Montgomery County, I'm very pleased with the process and the outcome of discussions with your team. And, Governor, if I could just say personally, you commented that you're a Republican, I'm a Democrat. But I think the product that we'll be voting on today is exactly what the citizens of the state deserve, which is people coming together around where they can agree and moving forward where they can have a consensus. So I'm a big fan of the team that you had working with us, particularly Mr. Slater proved to be very instrumental. I see Mr. Port sitting there. He didn't hurt anything, but
that's kind of you, sir.
But seriously, this is, I think what they want are elected officials that are going to put their state above their perhaps party acrimony that sometimes exists out there, and I just wanted to thank you for that. And I think we're going to get today a result that is better roads, better transit, and a better region. And I understand that no private properties will be acquired by the state of Maryland for this project without final approval of a P3 agreement by the Board of Public Works. The first phase of this product of this project will include the American Legion Bridge, as you noted, is a absolutely tremendous breakthrough with the state of Virginia. And it's also going to include the segment of 495 that extends from up to the 270 spur and then up 270 to I-370. And it is not going to include the segment of the Capitol Beltway between Interstate 270 east over to I-95, and that's because there are significant community impacts that need to be discussed and mitigated where possible. That segment, along with other beltway segments, will be considered by the Board of Public Works in the future. This agreement will provide Montgomery and Prince George's counties with direct transit subsidies from the project's toll receipts, the details of which will be specified in a memorandum of understanding between the state and the two counties. This MOU will be agreed upon prior to the board's final award of a vendor contract. Also included in this agreement is a commitment by the state to work directly with our local governments to mitigate any environmental and community impacts stemming from the project, as well as a commitment, which will be memorialized in writing, to complete this project with union workers at union wages. I believe this is the way, as I mentioned earlier, that government should work. As a result of our ongoing and constructive dialogue, the residents, commuters, and employers of the region are going to benefit from the great what I believe will be a great legacy-creating project, one with better roads, better mass transit, good-paying jobs, and a true partnership between our state and local governments. The amended agreement represents a far more balanced approach to the traffic gridlock that is inflicting more damage to our region's economy, environment, and quality of life with every passing day. Once again, Governor, I salute you for moving this very complicated project forward. Secretary Slater, thank you. Members of your team have been enormously responsive and helpful. This is a very early stage in the process, but I think it's a fair and balanced agreement that achieves our mutually shared goals, which I believe 90% of the public in Montgomery County fundamentally support what we're doing because it's a balanced, inclusive effort. And thank you.
Thank you, Madam Treasurer.
Thank you, Governor. The reason we have diversity is so we can have diverse opinions brought to the table, and mine is somewhat different. I do want to thank the new secretary and the governor for reaching out. I think this
He's
is a
quite
reset.
The new secretary,
secretary
yet, by the way.
Designate.
I think he has like another week before he officially takes over.
I hope you will be. it really is a breath of fresh air and a significant step forward, and I appreciate it. And having worked with you over the years, I know you mean it when you say we're going to have a lot of consultation. I must say I have not seen the word consultation repeated in a document so many times in a long time. And I do appreciate that. And I also want to say, lest anybody wonder, I will make a full disclosure. I own property. My home is about three blocks from the Beltway. From the American Legion Bridge. It's my backyard, and it's not that I don't know perfectly well, driving on it almost every day of the year, how important it is to move forward and to have the traffic be able to move and to do something about that American Legion Bridge. We were told a few months ago it couldn't be done, and now you're doing it, and I appreciate that very much. As treasurer, I have a particular perspective on this, and we have been sending questions to your department for months, and we finally got an answer on Monday when you were on the job, and I appreciate it. We haven't had the opportunity to go through the answer, and the answer seems to me quite candidly to state conclusions, very reasonable conclusions. But it would be good if we could see the numbers that went into those conclusions and understand why, for instance, we have to go with a P3 instead of looking at alternative, in the end, ultimately less expensive funding. And also how you are factoring in the impact on our legislated greenhouse gas emissions goals and all the other environmental protections. Happily, I can count to two, so we know where this project is going today. But I just want you to know that we will continue to be on top, doing essentially due diligence so we can report to the rating agencies and to our investors and to our citizens exactly what has happened and where, and with the enhanced transparency that is coming, I believe, it will be a job that you would make possible. We haven't been able to do that until now. But with those concerns, I cannot vote for this project right now, but I do want to say that it is, from my personal perspective, a vast improvement. The support of mass transit and the doing something with the American Legion Bridge going north to the ICC. I assume you're going to go farther north and try to go up at least to Frederick. Is a significant step forward, and I wish you well, and we will be continuing to ask these questions.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So seem to have a lot of folks here for that first item, so why don't we start with the transportation Department of Transportation agenda.
Frank. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Sean Powell, Deputy Secretary for the Maryland Department of Transportation. Today, the department will be presenting 23 items, and we do have representatives here to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Powell. We're going to start with item 23.
Really? Greg, are you ready for that?
I'd like to call on State Highway Administrator and incoming Transportation Secretary Greg Slater to present the item.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Governor Hogan, Comptroller Frenchio, and Treasurer Kopp. It's great to be here today as State Highway Administrator, one of the few hats that I'm wearing right now. The other one was a snow coat last night, but we seem to fare okay. So I am here today speaking on behalf of MDOT and the Transportation Authority, collectively referred to in your documents as the reporting agencies. Let me first start off by saying travelers in the National Capital Region, thank you for approving last June the conditional designation of the 495 and 270 P3 program, a public infrastructure asset, a public-private partnership, and approving the proposed competitive solicitation method and selecting those phases. Over the past 7 months, we've worked to implement the P3 program based on the board's approved designation and the conditions that were carried with it. In November, Governor Hogan made his historic announcement with Governor Northam about the Capital Beltway Accord, a long-sought historic cooperation with Virginia to rebuild the American Legion Bridge and create that unified Capital Beltway that we're striving for. Most recently, we've been working with many of our local partners to better understand the various perspectives around this complex effort. And that brings me to why I'm here today. As you may recall, your approval of the P3 program is based on five conditions. First, that no property acquisitions be related would take place on the traffic relief plan before BPW approval of the P3 agreement. Second, the RFP soliciting P3 contractor would permit mass transit bus access on the managed lanes without tolls. Third, 10% of the net toll proceeds after the P3 contractor gets reimbursed for construction costs would go to Montgomery and Prince George's County for regional transit services. Fourth, an initial feasibility study of the monorail would be performed. And fifth, the P3 program would start with Interstate 270 as phase one, and we would delay the Capital Beltway portion of Montgomery County and Prince George's County portion of the Capital Beltway. Based on our continued work since June, I'm here to update you on the status of three of these conditions and request amendments on two. First, condition one, we are committed to implementing a program with the least amount of impacts possible and minimizing techniques through our innovative dialogue process along the way. That's the way we've designed it, and we are committed to working with our private sector and local partners to complete that process, and we will not be bringing any right-of-way acquisition forward until we have all of those approvals in place. Second, we are developing a solicitation approach in which it will be clear that mass transit buses will be allowed on the managed lanes at no cost. Condition four, we are advancing quite well in our monorail study. We have substantial work underway. A preliminary draft study report is expected in early 2020, and we are looking for a final feasibility study to be completed in late spring, early summer of this year. We're looking really worldwide at where these systems are in place and figuring out where it can play a part in this conversation. Now for our requested amendments. Condition three. Respectfully, we request that the condition related to transit be amended as follows. The reporting agencies will develop a memorandum of understanding with the affected counties defining regional transit service improvements to be provided as part of our P3 agreements. The terms of the agreements will be provided to the Board of Public Works concurrently with the P3 agreements. Furthermore, the reporting agencies will develop transit service improvements collaboratively with the affected counties. The specific transit investment now will be provided as part of our P3 agreements, and that will ensure that the regional transit improvements are provided sooner than before and at defined and predictable times. By including this regional transit service improvement in the P3 agreement, the affected counties will be guaranteed that transit service improvements, and it will fully honor the original request, but in a more improved manner for that dedicated investment. The memorandum of understanding between MDOT and the affected counties defining transit improvements will be developed as part of the P3 agreements and will be provided to the Board of Public Works as part of the request for approval of the P3 when we come back. And condition five. Due to the historic nature of the Capitol Beltway Accord, we request this condition on phasing be amended as follows. The P3 program will be delivered through a solicitation of one or more phase developers. The first solicitation, phase one, will be included will include the Bi-State Capitol Beltway Accord Partnership for the American Legion Bridge, which will include 495 from the George Washington Parkway in Virginia to 270 and 270 from 495 to Interstate 70. The first section will be delivered under phase one, will be along 495 from south of the George Washington Parkway in Virginia to I-270 and along I-270 from 495 to 370. The remaining portion of I-270 from 370 to I-70 will be delivered as part of a future section, but only once the environmental approvals are in place for that. That's in a separate process. The remaining portion of 495 and 270 from the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, from 270 to the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, would be solicited at a later date and subject to Board of Public Works Amendment approval prior to proceeding with a subsequent phase. When, with your vote of approval today, we are prepared to move forward with a competitive and transparent solicitation process to select phase developers for the P3 agreement to develop phase one. Around July of 2020, we plan to issue a separate RFP for phase one to the shortlisted teams. Together, MDOT, MDOT-SHA, and MDTA would evaluate the proposals, select a phase developer to progress to the final phase P3 agreement. In conclusion, let me take a moment and remind everyone here today what the board's approval of these amendments are helping us address. The National Capital Region already has the second longest commuting times in the nation. Congestion increasingly limits our economic growth and the competitiveness of the region and diminishes our quality of life. By 2040, the region's population is anticipated to increase by 1.2 million people and nearly 1 million more jobs. On 495, the American Legion Bridge, between the American Legion Bridge and I-95, the average daily traffic will increase from 243,000 vehicles today to 277,000 vehicles by 2040. And this does not account for the $1.7 billion in unfunded system preservation needs that we have along that beltway that this public-private partnership will help us address. Conversely, I respectfully ask that you think about the opportunity we have before you today to address these conditions. On 495, the American Legion Bridge person throughput through our modeling will increase by 30%. The person throughput, 30% increase in the morning peak and 35% increase in the afternoon peak. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I respectfully ask that you approve the amendments and allow us to move forward with the solicitation process for phase one to collaboratively seek this much-needed congestion relief that we will bring back to the board.
Thank you very much, Mr. Slater. Any questions of the Treasurer or Comptroller?
I have a specific question. Greg, the transit, is Frederick County going to be included in this?
So the way the amendment is designed is affected counties. So Frederick County will be part of that conversation when we move forward with that northern piece of 270. I had a conversation with County Executive Gardner, and we've looked at some of their transit priorities, so they know that that's a later date, but we've
but
had
it's
that.
There.
It's there.
And you are moving smoothly as smoothly as you can into looking at that segment of the program?
Yes, we're in what's called a pre-NEPA phase for that one, and so we're really gathering all the information, understanding what kind of resources are around that system. The section of Interstate 270 above 370 is a little bit different in character than the section below 370, and then we have coordination with National Park Service on things like Monocacy Battlefield and those types of things. So we're working very smoothly in that pre-NEPA phase, and we're going to be kind of aggressively firing that one up.
Will you be looking at the potential of reverse lanes?
So we have several opportunities at play. The travel characteristics on that section are a little bit different, so they do offer an opportunity to really consider those reversible lanes. It's about a 65% directional split coming down in the morning and
right up
in the evening on that section. So it offers opportunities that the others do not.
And can you explain exactly when the funding will start?
For the transit funding. So that's really part of the evolution of this conversation over the last few weeks, where the original intent was this 10% later on after we paid back these pieces. What we've done now is modeled a little bit of what some of the folks have done across the country and our partners over in Virginia, where you set it up so those dollars start flowing the minute that the road starts operating.
the minute the road starts mm-hmm. operating. Great.
Thank you.
Any
questions?
Yes. Can I just ask one?
Oh, sorry.
We're still waiting for the environmental impact statements, which we will be able to see, I assume, before the contracts come before the board.
Yes. So the environmental impacts, so we're actually scheduled to have a draft document available later on this spring. We're working through all of the different analysis components of that today and our stakeholder agencies. It may actually be starting to get fed out to our stakeholder agencies in the next few days, but we're working closely. There will be some public hearings associated with that, and then later on we'll identify a preferred alternative and then move towards that process. But, yes.
I know. I'm sure you're aware of the fact that there are a lot of people who think that when this comes back to the board, it'll be too late, actually, to change. And people will have sunk a lot of money into it. So that was the concern about acting now before you see that. The decision's been made, and I understand that. But it still is very important that we all understand the environmental impacts and how this fits into the rest of the governor's and the state's environmental program.
Yes, ma'am. And I think, you know, what I'll say is there are some benefits as well at running these parallel processes. As you're able to bring a P3 concessionaire on board while you're still in that part of the phase where things are not completely baked and you can have a collaborative dialogue with them on board, your resource agencies and everyone, and make sure that that's built into the process. Where I've seen on the other side of that is you hand an environmental document over, and then there are some things that you encounter, and then that ends up costing you a little bit of money later on because you're having to change conditions and those types of things.
I want to say, I appreciate having a planner in your position.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Comptroller, any questions?
Yes. Earlier today, when I got out in front of the State House here, there were a number of very wonderful people representing the Sierra Club, and they came up and said, you need to oppose this project based on the environmental concerns that we have. And I said, look, I live in Tacoma Park, Maryland. I understand the activism that the Sierra Club represents. And I support mass transit just like the Sierra Club does. And Purple Line is moving forward in our region. I think it's going to be a tremendous asset. Governor, thank you for moving that forward early in your administration, even though you had obviously some, you know, conceptual concerns about the whole project. But that's going to be a big mass transit game changer for our region. But I said to them, much as I love the Sierra Club, I disagree with you about the need for added capacity to the Beltway. We simply have to do it. It is right now, the congestion is damaging our economy. And it's not just the regional economy, it's the whole reputation of the state. And I believe it's negatively impacting the environment because of the congestion. And I think the quality of life of the residents, as the treasurer mentioned, it's becoming unacceptable to just stand still and not do anything. So I happen to think the revised plan is a win-win for the region. I do have a couple of questions, if I could, Secretary Slater. You are confirming that Montgomery County and Prince George's County will receive transit funding once the managed toll lanes are operational, which is a big difference from after the bond holders are satisfied with all their obligations. But it's going to be the former. And I also want to confirm that you are committing to ensure that the winning vendor negotiates a community benefit agreement.
Yes, so the winning bidder will be at the table with groups like LIUNA, our MBE, DBE representatives, our local building trades, MTBMA, everybody at the table as we work out the terms and conditions for these provisions.
Excellent. In addition, I'd like to bring up what the treasurer was referring to. We like to have evidence-based, data-driven approaches to transportation planning. What proof does MDOT have that this revised plan will reduce congestion and provide traffic relief for the hundreds of thousands of of, what, millions of residents who reside, do business in, and travel in the capital region.
We've done a tremendous amount of sales modeling. I'm looking at one of our tables now. And what we're showing is a 35% reduction in delay on 495 and 270, as well as a 7% reduction in delay on the surrounding arterial roads. So that really equates to what we found to be about 73 hours a day per person out of traffic, or I'm sorry, a year out of traffic.
73 hours a day.
A year. 73 hours a year.
So I want to just ask a question about collaboration and engagement with local elected officials and agencies. Can you tell us what outreach has been done involving local elected officials and communities who would be potentially impacted by this project?
A tremendous amount at a couple of different levels. One is we've had over 200 different community engagement efforts over the last year or so. We've met with 27 different elected officials individually, and I've been personally having conversations with leadership at the planning board as well as leadership in the counties, just kind of working both at the council and the executive side. So it's really about having those one-on-one conversations. At the same time, we're working to figure out how we can increase the communication and transparency as a program as a whole so that we can not only do those individual conversations but work a little bit better as a group.
Excellent. And beyond highway expansion and the utilization of managed toll lanes, what other alternatives will MDOT be implementing to address congestion in the region in a fiscally, obviously, environmentally sustainable way?
I'm gonna look at the treasurer and give you my good planning answer.
Yeah.
I believe that transportation is about land use and mobility and accessibility and choice and safety and how we all get there together. So it's this system is where we're focused. With the Purple Line under construction, finding ways for WMATA to thrive with the investments. This transit investment as part of this, we're integrating some technology into our arterial system, how that all works together. The Capitol Beltway Accord also included a bike and pedestrian connection across the Potomac into the CNO Canal. So all of that kind of regional connection for everyone.
Excellent. And obviously one of the issues that concerns folks outside of our region in Maryland are financial protections for the taxpayers. Can you confirm for us, so that everyone is on the same page here, what happens if the developer becomes unable to fulfill the requirements of this project due to unfavorable financial or legal circumstances, like what we saw, I think, in Indiana is probably the worst example.
That is the one that many raise. But what happens is the developer, which is essentially made up of equity investors, before you get to that point, they step in, the lenders and the bondholders step in to ensure the success of the roadway. So the people that are using that system don't really feel that. And then we retain a right to really make sure that our citizens are taken care of as part of our contract.
Excellent. And the supplement states, quote, the developer will perform the work at its own cost, risk, and expense. However, the state, in certain circumstances, will receive superior value for money in exchange for retaining certain risks, end quote. Can MDOT elaborate and provide examples of the types of risks the state would retain?
Absolutely. There are certain risks that the public sector has to retain by law, and then there are certain risks that they have to retain just to make sure that we're taking care of our citizens. Things like permitting, environmental approvals, and utilities are a great example of that. So you always want the government public sector side to retain all that decision-making authority when it comes to the environmental pieces. So we retain that risk, those unforeseen conditions. If you transfer that risk to the private sector, essentially what they do is they build that into contingencies in their contract, and then we can't get the best value out of our bid.
Excellent. And what assurances can MDOT provide that Maryland taxpayers would not be subjected to exorbitant toll amounts to travel on the managed toll lanes? The project developer's main source of revenue, obviously, is going to come from the toll revenue. What kind of protections do you have for our commuters?
Sure. I might lean on my partner, Mr. Ports, here for a second, but our transportation authority, by law, is the only entity that can set toll rates. And by law, by federal law, we have to maintain a system that flows at 45 miles an hour on that interstate system for a managed lane system. So what we'll have is a process that we'll go through. There'll be a range set, and then there'll be a fully transparent public hearing process associated with that, and then come back. So there'll be a public process just for that toll setting by themselves.
Okay.
Can I just ask?
Sure.
Your predecessor explained to us that they would set this framework, but it would have a, I don't remember the term he used, a soft ceiling. What is a soft ceiling?
You can do it a few different ways, and I think it's been done a few different ways across the country. You know, have this algorithm where you can set what's called a soft cap, and if they get to that point where the operations really start to degrade and they need to exceed that soft cap, it requires our approval. So they can't do that without our discretion.
So you, in the end, are going to be responsible for the tolls. I was told, I don't know if it's true, that it went up to almost $60 last night in the snow in Virginia. Will we see that too?
The example that you're seeing there is a different facility. So you're looking at I-66, which is a full toll facility. That essentially was a full HOV facility that they implemented a small capacity difference. The ones on the Beltway for our counterparts in Virginia are very different.
I know they've tried every which way, and I gather haven't come up with what they think is perfect. But,
sure.
Okay. If I could finish up, I had a question about environmental assessments. Outside of the federally mandated NEPA review, what's taking place at the state level as far as environmental assessments for this project?
So we do have our NEPA process, and that NEPA process in very Maryland style is as comprehensive as you get in the country. So we take that beyond the normal process. That process also encompasses other environmental laws like the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, Endangered Species Act, Section 106, National Historic Preservation Act. We're doing air quality modeling as well as that includes greenhouse gas emissions and looking at all of that. And then our state environmental components, where we're working with our partners at MDE and Department of Natural Resources and the Historic Trust to make sure that all of our environmental players are not only met, our conditions are met, but we're at the table with them as we're trying to find these solutions.
Excellent. And let me just close by saying I think this is, once again, a win-win agreement for everyone involved in a consensus view that something has to be done about the congestion. I know a lot of the local officials have indicated that they may still have concerns, but they are in a much better place than we were a while ago. We have more work to do, and discussions will be held in the months and years ahead. But once again, I want to thank Governor Hogan for doing the right thing and getting this legacy project on the road, to pick a word, to success. And I think that down the road, you know, when people say what's going to happen to the next phase, it really depends on how successfully this is implemented. I imagine that it's going to be very successful, and there will be a lot less controversy and resistance to proposals to relieve congestion east of 270 in the future, but that obviously remains to be subject to future boards of public work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Slater, for your work.
Mr. Slater, thank you very much.
We're going to move agreement of the, with the amendments.
Well, we have a lot of people that have signed up to talk.
Oh, we are.
I just want to make sure that they get a chance to weigh in,
Can Leona come first?
Yeah, well, actually, I would love to have them, but we're going to take an elected official here from Montgomery County we want to take first. We've got a long list of folks, so we want to give everybody a chance to talk. We're going to maybe ask you to stay on hand for maybe to answer questions that arise, Mr. Slater, but thank you for presenting the item. We want to get everybody who's here, we want to thank you all for coming, and we want to give everybody a chance to talk, but we're going to ask you to limit your remarks to 2 minutes so we get a chance to hear from everyone. Secretary Gontram, we're going to ask you to try to keep people on the clock so they don't ramble on for longer than that to give everybody a chance. So we're going to start with Bridget Donald Newton, who is the mayor of the city of Rockville. Madam Mayor, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. Very nervous. I don't know why I'm so nervous.
You don't have to be nervous.
You know, I do this at home all the time.
But
it's different in front of this august body. Governor, I want to salute you for your wise choice with soon-to-be Secretary Slater. I think that is a very good move. So thank you for that. As you know, I think you received, all of you, a letter from the mayor and council last evening. It takes a while for things to get approved in the city, especially when we only learn about them on Friday. And I did speak with Mr. Slater this morning briefly, but I want you to know that when the city of Rockville learned about this project was at 4:30 on Friday afternoon when I received a phone call from a reporter. So I hope that going forward we will have a much more conscious effort to include the very impacted communities.
Well, let me just interrupt there for a second. I mean, we've been talking about the project for 5 years, and we've had meetings with the city of Rockville. We actually reached agreement and decided to put it on the agenda after the comptroller and I solved everybody's issues on Friday afternoon. So you weren't keeping a secret from us.
Okay, but you haven't solved Rockville's. And as the most impacted municipality, we are...
That's why we have this public hearing today, so we can hear.
And that's why I'm here. So we're very, very concerned. And I will just read you a couple paragraphs in the interest of time. The city of Rockville will be the most affected municipality as the 12 lanes of I-270 directly abut homes on both the north and south sides, Julius West Middle School, the Rockville Senior Center, Rockville Baptist Church, Rockville Christian Church, and the Rockville Nursing Home, all immediately abut 270. I was a history major, not a math major, but I can do the math, and taking 14 lanes to 2 lanes north of 370 isn't going to work. So,
25 seconds, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. That was quick.
I took a couple seconds of her time.
The city of Rockville owns 2 of the 3 bridges in the city that go over 270. I think that is something that we need to work very closely together on, Goody Drive and Wooten Parkway. In closing, you know, as always, sir, I stand ready to work with you all, and we hope to have more conversations and more inclusion going forward, especially as this will impact us the most.
Thank you very much for joining. Do you want to address any of her concerns right now? I don't want to slow down all the rest of the speakers, but because those are, you know, those are important concerns.
Absolutely.
That the, you know, most impacted municipality has raised.
And so we're not hitting any, there's no kind of housing impacts or business impacts on 270. There are small strips that we're kind of working through, but I'm committed to minimizing that as best we can and committed to working with you directly on trying to address this concern.
Someone said it was all going to be done within the current right-of-way.
With the exception of a few tiny strips, but no houses or buildings or properties will be taken.
So there's a tremendous amount of right-of-way on 270 different than 495, and you know, so you have... You have the right-of-way width, and so there's some space to work with, and then there's some space within those kind of local lanes, and we can all kind of work together on those.
Yeah. But we're committed to continuing to work in a more collaborative way with the city of Rockville.
And I have worked with Greg before. I know it's going to be better than it was, but please just understand how concerned
we'll commit to that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have with us Emmett Tidings from SMTA.
More crowded there than the Beltway.
Not quite.
Thank you to Governor Hogan, Comptroller Franchot, and Treasurer Cott for allowing me to speak today. My name is Emmett Tidings. I'm a 62-year resident of Montgomery County and owner of a small telecommunications company in Columbia, Maryland. For 4 decades, I have made my living driving the Baltimore-Washington region to meet with clients. That experience led me today to present this common sense advocacy for your P3 traffic relief plan. In my hand here is a somewhat grainy picture of an event I helped co-host in August of 2016. It shows Congressman John Delaney at our Fix I-270 podium, flanked by Senator Van Hollen, David Fraser Hidalgo, Aruna Miller, several Montgomery County Council members, Chamber of Commerce, and business leaders. I was right on the side of 270. This picture is proof positive that there are normal little people like me that have been organizing and championing the widening of I-270, 495, and the American Legion Bridge for years. We citizens want this. On the long-range planning task force at the Council of Governments, which Mayor Newton so ably co-chaired, It took us 14 months to reduce 70 projects, plans, priorities down to 7 aspirational initiatives that now reside in a visualized 2045 plan, formerly the CLRP, that include the regional toll lane network. This stuff doesn't just grow on trees. So today I'm speaking for the silent majority of Marylanders who support a multimodal transportation infrastructure that includes roads versus the vocal minority opposition that offers the hollow mantra of mass transit only. It's not an either-or proposition. Thank you for agreeing to vote on your thoughtful compromise of the P3 solution, and rest assured the vast majority of Marylanders support you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Could I just say that I've heard from a lot of people, and I don't think any of them have said mass transit only, but they are very concerned about how this program fits in with a multimodal transportation system for the future.
I respect that.
Thank you. Next, we have Rodney Roberts from the Greenbelt City Council.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for calling me so early. I'm not nervous because I know exactly what I want to say. And first thing I want to say is I'm on the City Greenbelt City Council and on there 28 years. But I can tell you this about the City Council. City Council unanimously opposes the 1950s mentality that this project represents. Other than that, these comments today are mine totally. I'm speaking for myself. I'm speaking for the citizens of Greenbelt that have elected me to the City Council for the last 28 years. In addition to that, I've spent 28 years on the Council of Governments Transportation Planning Board. I've lived in Greenbelt, Maryland, Prince George's County, all my life. I'm going on 62 years old. In addition to that, I think even more importantly, for 45 years, I've been traveling around the state of Maryland, Virginia, D.C. I repair construction equipment for a living. I depend on the roadways, just like everyone else does. I've been to literally thousands and thousands of job sites all over the area. So I've been on every road, every side road, you name it, I know where it is. Back in the early 70s, in 1969, my father bought a brand new car, one of the only ones he ever bought, because he just went back to work at the Army Map Service, so he was traveling the Beltway every day.
20 seconds, every, Councilmember.
What's that?
20 seconds, sir.
20 seconds? I'm opposed to this project. I wish you would, you know, I don't think I got my 2 minutes, but.
I think you only get 2 minutes. I don't know what time it is. Did you tell me the time is up?
No, sir, I said
25 seconds.
Okay.
25 seconds? And this is a project that's going to affect my
citizens? No, you only have 25 seconds left. You've got 2 minutes.
Correct.
I have 2 minutes to speak?
Beginning of the start of your
remarks. Now you have about 15 seconds.
Well, I guess, you know, the only thing I can say is I know exactly what happened with the nice bridge recently, so I know what promises mean around here. And, Mr. Francho, every year you come out to Greenbelt looking for votes. Don't come out. If you sell out the people of Greenbelt and everyone else that lives along the Beltway, don't come back to Greenbelt looking for our votes. If you think this is going to get you elected to governor, I think you're sadly mistaken, because 50 years or 100 years from now, when the water is lapping at the steps of this building because of climate change, you're not going to be looking so good, and the governor's not going to be looking so good.
All right, thank you very much.
I had a lot nicer things to say, but since you're going to cut me off so short, I had to get what I really wanted to say out there.
Thank you.
This project
stinks. We're just trying to be polite to all the folks that have come out to talk today. Next is
I think you should give people a decent amount of time to speak.
We have a 4-hour agenda today, and we're trying to get everybody a chance to talk.
Yeah, I know.
Next, we have Rick Weldon from the Frederick County Chamber of Commerce, former Delegate Rick Weldon. Where is Rick Weldon? Is he out in the hallway?
He has not checked in.
Okay. We'll move on to, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it, Bavor Neon Parasite. Sorry if I messed up your name, Bavor.
No problem. It's accurate. Good morning.
Good morning.
Bob Ermian. Bob Ermian, President and CEO of Tarasite Constructors. We are a heavy highway construction firm. We started the business in Virginia 5 years ago. I have about 75 employees. We have added an office in Gaithersburg, primarily because of the Purple Line project. I now have 15 employees working on that project, and we are looking forward to building our staff in Maryland. I'm here to support the I-495 270P3 project, including the amendments that are up for vote today. And I ask that the project be open competition so firms like mine can participate in the next phase of P3 in Maryland as well. Congestion is costing our local economy $1.3 billion in added cost per year. Traffic alleviation has been studied extensively, and the only viable option is to expand these stretches of roads to add more volume. The often heard argument that new lanes will not result in reduced congestion is false. These lanes do not create new drivers. They simply move drivers away from congested lanes and off neighborhood roads. I commute on 495 in Virginia every day, and I can tell you having the option to pay the toll when I need to get somewhere is very viable, and it allows us to bring people in from other states when they recognize they have options for transportation in the area.
30 seconds, Mr. Brown.
Sure. I also want to talk about the Georgia-Atlanta project, which recently implemented express toll lanes. Since opening, the rush hour speeds on those highways have doubled from 20 miles per hour to 40 miles per hour. Rush hour commutes have reduced by an hour. Think about all the extra time that frees up for the residents to spend with their families. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Josh Tolkien from the Sierra Club. Tolkien? There you go.
I apologize. I met some congestion on my way up to the podium. Good morning. My name is Josh Tolkien. I'm the director of the Maryland chapter of the Sierra Club. On behalf of our 72,000 members and supporters in the state, we do urge you to not move forward on this plan today. I've been told that if everything's a priority, nothing is a priority. When we talk about traffic relief, there's an expectation that you come up and you show traffic data to show that there will be congestion relief. If climate change is a priority, you would not be moving forward without having the data to show that this will not have a negative impact. I appreciate the comptroller's discussion of environmental impacts, but in the opening statements of the three of you, the treasurer was the only one to actually mention climate change or greenhouse gas emissions. If it's important, we would not move forward without knowing the data. There's been a discussion that this project is a win-win. Right now, transportation is the largest source of carbon pollution in Maryland. If we were taking climate change seriously, it would be a central part of this conversation. We'd have the data. We'd know what was being modeled. There have been claims to very, very specific traffic benefits, 35% reductions here. That means that there's actually some structure to the modeling. There's an assumption. How many lanes? How many cars? So to have that and at the same time tell us that the NEPA process is continuing and we're exploring all alternatives. If you move forward on a bid for very specific solicitation from companies, the people who are doing the environmental studies will assume that the decision's already been made.
25 seconds, Mr. Tolkien.
There's been a discussion that this project is a win-win. I believe that we are not considering the next generation when we're talking about winners and losers here. Climate change is an intergenerational threat. And if we are serious about climate change, it needs to be front and center before we begin making contracts and moving forward. With respect to the comptroller and everybody up here, none of you are environmental engineers. And if this is important, we will wait to hear from the experts before moving forward. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Josh.
Next, we have Bob Buchanan from the 2030 Group.
Good morning, Governor, members of the board. I'm Bob Buchanan, and I'm with the 2030 Group, which is a group of business leaders from suburban Maryland, Northern Virginia, and the Washington, D.C. area, talking about the need for regionalism, and this project certainly meets that need. I commend the efforts you have made, Governor, and your commitment to see this through. I just wish today's conversation were further along. I was here 7 months ago when the last hearing, and I wish there was more to talk about the broken Maryland Beltway on our agenda. But I realize to make things happen, you're doing what you can, and I certainly appreciate it. My only comment would be the word connectivity. HQ2 experience taught us that companies like Amazon really want to go where there's connectivity between this great workforce we have, where they live and where they work. And this project addresses it in a regional way. But there's many others that need to be on our agenda item, and I hope next time we talk they are being prioritized. But again, congratulations for getting us to where we are. As a business leader, it has been frustrating. Perfect is the enemy of good, and it's an economic imperative that we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next we have Brad German, Citizens Against Beltway Expansion.
Good morning, and thank you very much for this opportunity. I speak on behalf of Citizens Against Beltway Expansion. It's a local group that has about 1,300 civic associations and residents who would be affected by this proposal. First, we do appreciate the efforts that have been made to address some of the issues that we've had with the expansion of I-495 and to improve collaboration with state and local governments. But transparency and collaboration with stakeholders is sound policy, and it is the right and best way to build for long-term congestion relief in suburban Maryland. That's why we believe some more needs to be done to avoid the practical and financial failures of comparable P3 tollways that we've seen in North Carolina, Texas, and other states. We really need to act more to best protect the interests of Maryland communities, commuters, the environment, and taxpayers by explicitly requiring MDOT to share its latest traffic and revenue projections, current origin destination data, toll estimates, environmental data with the public, the General Assembly, and all of those agencies that have independent analysis and verification responsibilities. The same goes for sharing the details of the 2019 American Legion Bridge Accord that you signed with Governor Northam. These details should not be hidden from Maryland taxpayers and drivers, since we are the ones who will be paying the bills, sitting in traffic, breathing the exhaust, and on the hook if the developer is over-optimistic with their projections. Over-optimism is a real problem with P3 tollways. Independent due diligence is critical, especially since it's clear public money will be involved, whether or not it comes from new taxes. And given the track record of P3 tollways, nobody should be in a hurry to sign taxpayers up for a 50-year game of gotcha with a tollway concessioner.
25 seconds.
We are also concerned with the premature elimination and de-emphasis of other options, such as mass transit, although we do agree with and are pleased with some of the changes that have been made within the amendments, but we therefore ask you to remind, but more can be done, since altogether these packages can deliver congestion relief at a cost of one-tenth of what the current P3 tollway proposal is billed at. We therefore ask you to remand the current request back to MDOT to address these data issues, and let's get it right. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have John Kane, Citizens for Traffic Relief.
Governor, could I just say, John, good morning.
Good morning.
Comes up. I share folks' feeling that we should see more data, that it should be public, that it so people understand it. I don't believe that you are intentionally hiding it, and the word hidden raises red flags. But one of the concerns is we can't see everything. We just see the conclusions, so you don't know. Thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you, Governor, Comptroller Franchot, and Treasurer Kopp. Our group, Citizens for Traffic Relief, supports Maryland's plan to use private funding to add congestion-managed express lanes on I-270 and the Beltway to increase travel options, reduce delays, and improve transit service. Much is being said about the impact on our climate, but the science is clear on this. When you increase rush hour speeds from 10 miles per hour to 35 miles per hour, you cut CO2 emissions per mile by more than half. So I keep trying to emphasize that to the elected officials I've met with in Montgomery County and Prince George's County. And once they look at the report that I send them, they understand it, and they're a bit enlightened. I'm going to pass on the rest of this because it was disturbing what the man said earlier, particularly about Comptroller Franchot. Greenbelt.
I didn't take it personally.
Here's my thing. I've been around and met with legislators in Montgomery and Prince George's County, and I've been meeting other folks who are, I guess, opponents. And it bothers me that this becomes such a personal attack. And I think we have too much of that in Washington. The honorable council member from Hyattsville, I think, or from Greenbelt, I think that's not what we do in Maryland, and I think that's not healthy. I think folks that are opponents of ours are not the enemy. We just disagree. And you certainly could have kept this issue going on for months and months and months. Not bad ink for a constituent that you're going to possibly depend on. You didn't. You rose to the challenge of great leadership, as Governor Hogan has done, and Secretary Kopp is interested in learning more about the details of the program. So I commend the three of you, and I would just ask the opponents, let's be civil. We're not enemies. That's all I have. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Questions?
Thank you. Next, we have Lewis Campion, Maryland Motor Truck Association.
Thank you, Governor, Comptroller Francho, and Treasurer Kopp. Again, Lewis Campion, for the record, with Maryland Motor Truck Association, representing in excess of 1,000 trucking companies and their suppliers around the state here in support of this proposal. You know, by all measures, we've heard about congestion getting worse. Our industry is constantly battling congestion, right? We're delivering the food, the medicine, the clothes, all the supplies that citizens need in their daily lives. And for us, congestion has a direct impact on any number of costs, whether that be driving up your fuel costs, your labor costs, increased emissions as a result, and making it increasingly difficult to actually deliver goods within the hours of service limits that are set for truck drivers in state and federal law. What are we seeing? We're seeing where we have to buy more equipment. We have to put up more distribution centers. Why? Because we need to try and shorten the average delivery because our transportation costs or our transportation times are so unpredictable. The cost of congestion to our industry is calculated at 1.2 billion hours. And if I can illustrate that, that is the equivalent of 425,000 truck drivers sitting on the roadway in congestion without moving for an entire year. We urge your support.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Nancy Saring from the League of Women Voters.
Governor Hogan, Treasurer Kopp, Comptroller Francho, I appreciate the opportunity to address you today. And we do appreciate that you've begun to have conversations with local officials and have made some adjustments to the amendments that were proposed for the December 4th meeting. The League of Women Voters has always supported achieving and maintaining cooperative working relationships among state and local agencies in order to achieve better planning and to decrease the use of single occupancy vehicles. I'm afraid that this project does not decrease the use of single occupancy vehicles. These are some of our specific concerns. The list of alternatives retained for detailed study eliminates any meaningful consideration of travel demand management solutions, expanded transit solutions, or more incremental highway improvements such as reversible lanes or addition of lanes within the existing footprint. There's been a complete lack of transparency about the calculations that show that the project is financially viable. Additionally, if relief from congestion results from this project, and there is considerable study that says adding lanes is only a short-term solution, those who can afford to pay are the only ones that will see that relief. This is a real problem for our environmental and social justice values. While the amendment now allows for potential revenue to flow to transit before construction expenses have been paid, the terms of the MOU are still a mystery, and we do appreciate hearing that the approval of that MOU and your due diligence will be part of this moving forward.
25 seconds, Ms. Sorin.
We ask that you reconsider this P3 project and develop a long-term, comprehensive, sustainable plan for a transportation system that will carry Maryland into the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just want to interject for a second. A number of people have brought up transit. We need to invest more in transit. We're not investing enough in transit. And this is sort of a dialogue we hear a lot about. I just want to get this on the record. I've been governor for 5 years. Our administration has invested $14 billion in transit. I've invested more in transit than any governor in the history of the state of Maryland. We're building the Purple Line right in the same vicinity, just adjacent to where we're talking about road improvements now. This is the largest public-private P3 transit project in North America that was sitting around for years, and we're finally moving forward on it, much like we are on the traffic relief. We came forward with a proposal for the region to save the metro system, which and to tie in the Purple Line with the transit system. So for anybody to say we don't believe in transit options, that's just simply not true. More of our transportation dollars go into transit than roads. The problem is only 8% of our population uses transit ever. So a lot of people are still stuck in traffic, and that's why we're trying to also address the people that are stuck in the traffic on the roads. Next, we want to hear from John Townsend, AAA Mid-Atlantic.
Good morning, Governor, Comptroller Francho, and Treasurer Knopf. I'm from AAA. We represent 60 million members across the country, a million members in the state of Maryland, and we support this project, especially Phase 1, because this is, as we've been saying all morning, about traffic relief, about congestion relief. It's about common sense. It is about the quality of life. It is about your legacy, because this is a paradigm change. We're changing the status quo. We're making Maryland competitive, not only with Northern Virginia and the state of Virginia, but also with the balance of the United States, because this is also about economic development and job creation. And let me just underscore this, because this is a strange thing you would think for AAA to talk about. But we're concerned because we think that the state of Maryland has lost its position as one of the great economic powerhouses in, and this is not a reflection on you, Governor, but it's reality. In comparison to Northern Virginia, in the first 10 months of 2019, nearly 20,000 jobs were created. About 54,000 jobs were created in that same span of time in the District of Columbia, but only 200 jobs were created in suburban Maryland.
25
and we
seconds,
think
Council.
This is linked to the congestion on our roadways. There is a link between economic development and infrastructure. So let's go ahead with this project. Let's change the paradigm, and let's secure the future and the economy of the state of Maryland. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And let me just correct what you just said a little bit.
Okay.
You said it right, but I just want to clarify it. We actually, during that same time frame, had the highest job growth, rate of job growth of any state in America. We went from losing 100,000 jobs to gaining 140,000 jobs. We've had record job growth for the past 8 months in the state of Maryland.
Yes.
Where we haven't had job growth is in Montgomery County.
Right.
And Prince George's County. That's because right. of the road congestion. So
Northern
Virginia is beating Montgomery County. The state of Maryland is growing jobs at a faster rate than the state of Virginia.
Thank you for
It's because we've got 800 road projects moving forward on every single top priority project in the entire state in every jurisdiction, $9 billion. That's a part of why. We went from our overall economic performance was 49th out of 50 states, and we moved into the top 10. So we're doing great things. The place that's suffering is this place where this traffic congestion is.
200 jobs.
And if I
200 jobs,
believe, Montgomery County.
200 jobs.
Yeah, could I jump in, though?
Yes.
Because the Wall Street Journal recently had a big article about Maryland being the richest state in the United States of America. Average family median income, $80,700. So, yes, we have some challenges with employment and new businesses coming into Montgomery County. But I didn't see Virginia on that list.
Well, 10 years ago, Montgomery County was...
Sorry, we got to move on because we got
to... Yeah.
Well,
I love Virginia.
Hey, John, we'll have another discussion about that later.
Could I just say, sir, that there are... I am a member of AAA, and I respectfully disagree with my organization's position.
Right.
Next, we have Jane Lyons from the Coalition for Smarter Growth.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition for Smarter Growth, the leading organization in D.C., advocating for walkable, inclusive, transit-oriented communities throughout the region. The multi-billion dollar, decades-long decision being made today is being rushed. We believe it's premature and lacks adequate environmental alternatives and financial analyses. MDOT has begun with the conclusion to build private toll lanes rather than with an objective analysis of alternatives. Crucial information has not been shared, and the public deserves to know how much they are expected to pay, both in tolls and potentially in taxes. To date, MDOT has failed to study a true, comprehensive transit demand management and transit-oriented land use alternative, and Maryland has 26 metro stations, many of which are not being fully utilized. Incentivizing commercial development and residential development at those transit stations would do more to reduce driving, long-distance commuting, and traffic than further widening highways. Because of induced demand, newly widened highways and metropolitan areas fill up again in as few as 5 years, but transit-oriented development provides long-term traffic mitigation. It's clear from the choice that Amazon made with HQ2, the high value that modern employers place on access to high-quality public transit. For these reasons, we urge the board to delay further action and steps towards a P3 agreement and ultimately to adopt a more effective and sustainable transit-oriented approach. At a minimum, this project requires a comprehensive alternatives and impact analysis, clarification of the state's financial obligations, independent financial and traffic analyses, and a better deal for transit. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for your time, and I'll again reiterate that we worked with Virginia and D.C. to come up with a sustainable funding source for Metro, and we're building the Purple Line, which is the largest transit project, not only in the region, but in North America.
And that Secretary Designee Slater has committed to providing this information to us now.
But I was just responding to her comment about Virginia's doing transit, and we're not. We're actually doing transit. Barry Catterton, Specialized Engineering. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, board and guests. I'm Barry Catterton, a vice president at Specialized Engineering. We're an employee-owned company based in Frederick with an office and construction materials testing laboratory in Hanover, Maryland, as well. The company was formed 28 years ago in the garage of one of our founders. We employ just under 100 men and women with civil engineering, geology, construction quality control technicians, and construction quality assurance inspectors, as well as laboratory technicians and administrative professionals. Some of our folks are licensed engineers with advanced degrees. Others have their GED, but they all have the opportunity to thrive in our company. Many of our firms, like us in Maryland, depend heavily and were formed to support Maryland's transportation engineering and quality assurance needs in helping MDOT to ensure the safety of the traveling public. Specialized Engineering and I support the I-495-270P3 project, including these amendments. Approval of this program is a necessity. A project of this magnitude would cause a significant hardship on the public funding of Maryland in a traditional design bid build format. The state of Maryland simply cannot afford this expansion on tax dollars alone. On the other hand, the private sector is eagerly waiting to fill the void in funding. MDOT and SHA have done the work. They've completed the studies, and this proposed project is exactly what what Maryland needs to alleviate traffic in the D.C. metro area. Private involvement will alleviate the maintenance costs of the new construction, saving the state millions of dollars into the future.
25 seconds.
Just to maintain the current roads on the I-495 and 270, the state will need to invest $1.7 billion, and that comes with no congestion relief. Instead, this project will free up that $1.7 billion for other vital projects in the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Michael Cicada, MTVMA.
Here. So no congestion jokes, but for the Elvis fans, it is Elvis' birthday. So I'm Michael Cicada.
Yesterday was Lamar Jackson's birthday.
Oh. Go Ravens. Thank you for being here. I'm Michael Cicada, head of Maryland Transportation Builders and Materials Association. MTVA represents 21,000 workers and business owners in the transportation construction industry, and we're ready, eager to help alleviate the strain on Maryland drivers. Well, no, it's, let's move forward on this project. I'm not going to talk about that, but really, I think nobody doubts the traffic concerns around 270 and 495 are terrible and cause an insurmountable stress on Maryland residents anytime they get on the roads and the surrounding roads. Not only will this project solve our biggest concern, being traffic, but it also has additional benefits, such as creating, obviously, a lot of talk about 117,000 to 143,000 new jobs. These are high-paying, high-quality, highly skilled jobs. MDOT has planned a robust inclusion requirement and ensures that the construction is done by Marylanders. This is obviously the biggest project in the universe, right, as a lot of us talked about. We need to make sure it manages a balanced approach. PT projects must have the most flexible and dynamic operating terms, and anything that restricts a company's ability to maximize and deploy its resources freely would hinder that operation. All that being said, this will require a workforce from union and non-union folks across the board. The largest in the universe, this is going to require all of us to get together and move to get this thing moving forward.
46.
Thank you. YMCA members are ready to supply the workforce and materials needed to get Maryland is moving again. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Denise Guiatara, Audubon Naturalist Society. I'm sorry, I hope I got your name right.
Good morning. My name is Denise Guiatara, and I'm here with the Audubon Naturalist Society. For 122 years, Audubon Naturalist Society has inspired people to enjoy, learn about, and protect nature. Today, we urge the Board of Public Works to vote against line item 23GM that seeks to amend the P3 process for soliciting developers before the environmental impact statements are released. MDOT and MDTA have not provided adequate or transparent information regarding the environmental and financial impacts of the highway and the bridge expansions. It is the Board's duty to wait for the environmental impact statements to be released before proceeding in securing implementation partnerships and contracts. We consider these studies to be the eyes on the environment. In today's climate crisis, adding more luxury lanes for cars is neither an equitable nor environmentally sound solution. We condemn that a plan that prioritizes climate action is the only route for satisfaction. The state must seek transit-focused solutions that reduce traffic congestion while reducing greenhouse gases. Adding more lanes will increase the number of impervious surfaces, which consequently degrade the water quality used by people and wildlife alike. Our precious local streams impacted by these changes include Rock Creek, Sligo Creek, the Potomac, and Anacostia, and eventually our Chesapeake Bay. Without transparency, financial review, and the EAS is at hand, the Board lacks the critical information it needs for approval. On behalf of ANS and our 10,000 members, I exhort the Board to act responsibly and vote against line item 23GM today. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Dennis Desmond from LIUNA. And let me just say, you see some guys here with orange shirts on. There's a whole army of them out there that could not fit in the room. We didn't want to kick everybody else out, but we want to thank you for all being here today.
Thank you, Governor. 36 of them, including some right here in the audience. And so I represent Laborers Union Local 11. So who are we? We are commercial construction workers. We are on the Purple Line. We are on the northeast boundary tunnel cleaning up the dirty water in D.C. We are repairing the metro. We are the people who lay the asphalt, who pour the concrete, who put down the utilities, and who the flaggers. Some of you beep your horns out of understandable impatience, but that's what we do to keep these projects safe. So thank you, Governor Hogan. Thank you, Comptroller Franchot, that you have allowed union workers to bring their training and skills to this project, and we pledge to do as good a job here as we've done on the others. And we've worked on a lot of the areas, public-private partnership projects, by the way, but for that model, those projects would not have been built. Let me just say on a personal matter, I am a resident of Montgomery County, Maryland, as are about a third of our members. And so what we bring to the table on any project is a living wage, a pension, health insurance, so that when our kids get sick, we go to a private doctor and not a hospital, a taxpayer expense. And also we have access to world-class vocational educational programs. Because most of our members do not go to college, but to get ahead, you need to have that kind of access to education. So my point here, the bottom line, this isn't just a path to fixing infrastructure, crumbling roads and bridges. This is also a path to the middle class.
Thank you. And thank you. And earlier, all your members said they were also sick and tired of sitting in traffic.
They hate sitting in traffic. And it also makes you late to the job. It affects, I mean, seriously, though, you know, when you look at our ability to perform infrastructure projects in the area, when you can't get people to jobs, you can't finish things on time, you can't finish them on budget, and you also have safety issues, too.
Is that your billboard that was going around?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you. I like that sign. You just keep that going around every day. Thank you.
Can I ask Mr. Slater a question about this?
I'm sorry.
Appreciate it.
We thank you, though.
Thank you. I was told there's a provision in here about labor or about PLA, but I don't see it in the item. Where would I see that?
So the entire project will be built under prevailing wage and Davis-Bacon and all of that, and we're committed to working on a benefits agreement that would include our labor partners and our MBE and DBE partners and everybody at the table as we work together.
Okay, so it's a commitment. It's not something we're voting on
right
to today. And you're following the law, which is yeah. Davis-Bacon. It's good to hear that.
Well, as Mr. Cicada said yesterday, it's going to be it's the largest P3 road project in the universe, and it's going to require more all the labor we can get, both union and non-union, and meet the mic. MBE contracts, which we don't have. We're going to put everybody to work that we possibly can.
But it's not something we're voting on.
Right. Next, we have John Peterson from the Peterson Companies.
Good morning. I appreciate the opportunity. This is a transformational opportunity here, and I appreciate everyone involved in getting it to this point, especially the leadership of the governor. I can't help but look back almost 20 to 25 years ago when we were having a similar discussion about the Woodrow Wilson Bridge and how it was the biggest choke point in America. Hopefully someday we're going to kick that, notation. But I just want to say, as we have equal properties that we develop in Virginia and Maryland, and I can't help but say there's a great test tube that's happening over in Virginia, and look at the results that have happened over there. It has been transformational, such that they are expanding a project that they had no intention of expanding originally, and they are adding another project on I-66. So, you know, in the development community, if you see something that's great, you know, plagiarism's okay. You know, you do the same thing. So I would urge to move forward with this. And, you know, the phase basis, that's great. I think, though, in the future, the growth is coming. It is really coming. And we need to be prepared for that. What we're doing today is a Band-Aid, and it's reactive. I would hope that in the future we could be more proactive and be forward and visionary and try and get ahead of some of the problems as opposed to react to them. As we all get more agitated. I think it's great for the economic development, as the 2030 the group talked about. The connectivity is invaluable. I would just say that the benefactors of the Woodrow Wilson Bridge were Alexandria, yes. It wouldn't be what it is. We developed National Harbor. National Harbor would not be what it is today without that bridge. And that property brings hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to this state as a result of that major infrastructure improvement. So I thank you for getting it to this point.
Thank you very much, John. If you didn't bring that up, I was going to. I just can't thank you enough. You know, this is the kind of transformational thing that can happen. If it were not for that Woodrow Wilson Bridge, you would have never done National Harbor. It's the most important economic development project, I think, to ever happen in the state of Maryland. And we can't thank you enough for your investment in the state and creating all those jobs. And it's the gateway to Maryland down in the south. And we love to see this bridge on the other side do the same kind of thing for Montgomery County. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next we have Janet Gallant, don'twiden270.org. Not sure which position she's going to take on this. Janet, thank you for joining us.
Our organization has over 1,000 members. Just after Thanksgiving, I was part of a small group meeting with the controller, and we told you then the people you'd most expect to be happy about this P3 project are not happy, just angry. We know that because we're a boots-on-the-ground organization. We knock on doors, we speak widely, and we stand outside of MDOT meetings, most recently in upper 270 communities, talking to everyone on their way inside. These are the people hit hardest by congestion. and they take it as a given the toll lane project won't help them in any way. In fact, it will make things worse. They know the tolls will be unaffordable. Why else would the state refuse to release the expected toll rates? They're sure the free lanes will stay congested because the northern bottleneck will remain. More people will take 270, and most will be priced out of the toll lanes. And they don't for a minute buy MDOT's story that the road project will cost the state nothing. One way or another, we all know we're going to pay for this $11 billion deal through tolls, through that sharing of risk item, through bailing out the builder, and more. You may call this 270P3 plan a win-win, but who's winning? It's not the state's taxpayers, not the voters losing trust in their elected officials, not people worried about the environment, not local communities, and not commuters. None of them think they'll come out ahead. We're looking for something different, and so sensible it seems obvious. Fair, effective, multimodal transportation supported by evidence that it will actually work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next we have Daniel Flores. Daniel Flores of the Greater Washington Board of Trade.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today in support, and also a former resident of Maryland. I'm sorry.
Traffic got too bad.
Close to 40 years in Prince George's County and Montgomery County, and I'll bet that two of those, if not more, probably spend in traffic. So I moved to Virginia, but I'm very positive of what's going on over here. And at the Board of Trade, we're working on a smart region projects, and it's Connected DMV. And Connected DMV goes beyond technology. This is what's happening now. It's what we want to see, how we connect our communities, how we connect everybody, our visitors, our residents, to make sure that we mobilize, alleviating traffic congestion in Greater Washington to reduce the cost of congestion and to attract and retain qualified employees, keep businesses and attract new ones, is one of the Board of Trade's priorities. On the infrastructure side, we support the construction of new roads, transit, and bridges and the funds needed to secure these improvements. Examples of the Board of Trade priorities have included the Intercounty Connector, the Purple Line, which have been mentioned many times, regional system of hot lanes complementing those now in Virginia, and more. Obviously, we are in strong support of what has been put today on the table, and we commend you on that, as well as selecting Mr. Slater here for the Transportation Secretary. The Board of Trade will continue to work with your administration and the Secretary in many of the opportunities that we're going to have in the state.
10 seconds.
We believe ultimately that the entire region interstate highway system needs to be upgraded and modernized with new managed lanes and express bus transit service on the entire network. However, the changes before you give us a place to start right now.
It's time, Mr. Flores.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Next, we have Ben Ross, MTOC.
Good morning.
I don't have a watch. Is it still morning?
I'm Ben Ross, chair of the Maryland Transit Opportunities Coalition, a statewide coalition of grassroots transit advocates and transit workers. I just want to say a few words about this project. It is a fundamentally flawed project overall, and the result of that is that when you fix one problem, you create others, and that's what we see here. By limiting the project approval now to the lower part of 270 and the bridge area, you are creating more traffic jams in other places. You will have 9 lanes merging into 2 going northbound on 270, and you will have 4 additional lanes feeding into the backup that you already have at the Wisconsin Avenue exits to the Beltway. So the effect of that is that for most trips within Maryland, traffic will actually be worse. Now, what will that do to our economy? There's lots of research that shows that business locations are often driven by convenience to the boss. And if you are a CEO living in Potomac or Bethesda, you have a easy drive to Tyson's, and you can afford the toll, and you have worse traffic going elsewhere in Maryland.
25 seconds.
So I believe this is not good for traffic, and it is not good for the economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Higgins from Concrete General.
Well, good early afternoon to everyone. Again, I'm Mike Higgins. I'm the general manager for Concrete General. We're a Gaithersburg-based heavy highway contractor. We perform work throughout the state of Maryland, mostly for MDOT, SHA, and MDTA, including the current I-270 congestion relief project that's ongoing on 270 right now. Again, just a Band-Aid for a big fix. Founded in 1972, we're a third-generation company with over 300 employees. We support the I-495, I-270 program, including these amendments today. Maryland drivers spend about 82 hours sitting in traffic in the metro area, which costs us probably over $1 billion in added costs each year. This hurts businesses, including mine, that have to get to various work sites in order to perform their work. Congestion drives up the cost of doing business, causing residents and taxpayers to foot the bill. I know I have a good day, but I don't have to go on 495. That's probably not a good thing to say as a road builder. Virginia's express toll lanes on I-495 and I-95 have decreased travel times by between 23 minutes on 495 and almost 60 minutes on 95 during peak travel periods. The horror stories is, Mike had talked about, Greg talked about too, the horror stories about the I-66 massive tolls do not apply to this proposal because the portion of I-66 where the tolls are occurring are HOV lanes now.
30 seconds, Mr.
Thanks. Those large tolls will apply only to single passengers and vehicles who wanted to travel that area. So these roads do work, and they do get people moving. So I thank you for your time and also your continued support to move forward with this very critical project for the state.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Brian O'Malley, the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance.
I just checked. It's still barely morning.
Oh, good. Thanks
for the opportunity to testify.
It feels like afternoon.
I'm sure, and you have a long day ahead of you. I want to recognize the call for civility. I agree that's important. It's also critically important that we be honest and clear. Let's start with the concept that when we expand roadway networks more than we expand other options like bus, train, bike, pedestrian, that leads people to drive more. That's been the story for decades, and that's why in 2018, Marylanders drove more per capita, more miles per capita than at any point in history. That's traffic. That's what traffic is more of us in cars driving around. That means that that comes from, for example, we've tried widening, and as we've added roadway capacity, the hours of delay in traffic grows much faster. It doesn't solve traffic. It leads to more of it. That's because when we, for example, if we add we turn 12 lanes on 270 through Rockville to 16 lanes, there will be widened arterials north of there. There will be farmland converted to cul-de-sacs and strip malls, and everything will spread out more, and we will all drive more to do the things we do in our daily lives. That means more widening of the gap of economic opportunity. Some people will be able to afford to drive more to pay the tolls, and others will be cut off and left behind. It also means more emissions. We should be very clear that the study that was cited when people drive 20 miles per hour instead of 10 miles per hour or 40 miles per hour, the emissions per mile go down. The author of that study asked Maryland to not cite it as an example for this project because it's taken out of context.
10 seconds.
The truth is that when we drive more, when we widen highways and we drive faster, people also drive more, and that will result in more emissions. That's why the Chesapeake Bay Foundation supports our call for
rejecting this proposal. That's why Sierra Club and Chesapeake Climate Action Network were here. So the sooner we recognize that, the sooner Maryland can effectively address these crises. Please start today by voting no. Thank you.
Thank you. But you do support our prioritization of transit and building the Purple Line and all that.
I'm concerned that the MTA budget has been cut, that it's going to be cut in half by 2024. The Maryland Transit Administration budget in 2024 is half of what it is in 2019 in the program. And the development pipeline is empty. There's only one project in it.
I'm just telling you, we've invested $1 million for in transit. Nobody's invested more. The Purple Line is the largest investment in transit in North America. So we're not going to argue today, but you have to check your facts.
I'm here to argue that we need to prioritize that more.
I agree. I've been prioritizing it, but we're also going to have to fix traffic. Thank you very much. Next, we have Joe McAndrew, the Greater Washington Partnership.
Good morning. Thank you for the ability to speak today. I'm here on behalf of the Greater Washington Partnership asking for your support for this important vote. The partnership is a civic alliance of the leading employers in the capital region from Baltimore to Richmond, and one of our main priorities is strengthening the transportation system throughout the region. As we seek to compete in an ever-evolving global economy, the congestion of our region's roadway network and limited growth of the region's transit system is holding us back. Our residents and businesses are paying the ultimate price, with estimates of congestion ranging up to $7 billion annually. The status quo just simply is unacceptable. The partnership supports solutions that can measurably improve our multimodal transportation system. This includes creating the Blueprint for Regional Mobility, the first CEO-led, driven comprehensive transportation strategy for the region, a plan that includes a regionally coordinated performance-driven tolling network. When implemented correctly, performance-driven tolls are a powerful tool that can reduce congestion, increase vehicle speeds, improve reliability, enhance access for all wage earners, and provide improved travel options. The public analysis and debate to date on the traffic relief program has improved this project, and this should not end today after the vote. As this project advances, the partnership encourages the state to prioritize providing enhanced connectivity to the greatest number of people, not necessarily moving the most vehicles or generating the most revenue.
30 seconds.
This should include harmonization of free high occupancy vehicle policies with Virginia and the traffic relief plan. The state should develop a strategy that ensures residents of all income levels benefits from the tolling investments, including those without the financial means to afford the tolls. And finally, the state should continue to coordinate with all stakeholders in the RFP process to ensure we maximize the public benefit of this transformational investment. Thank you very much. Thank you for your support.
Thank you very much. I want to first of all thank all of the people who took the time to come out and testify today, and thank you for your patience in sitting here. We appreciate all of your input. Are there any questions of Comptroller Francho or Treasurer Kopp at this point? We can bring Slater back.
We have a question except to Mr. Slater. I want to thank you for the work and the commitments you've made. We'll go through these transcripts. We'll go through the questions we have together and look forward to seeing in the near future the information about the financials, the projections, the traffic, origin, destination, all these things that folks have been asking for, and look forward to having an opportunity. I'm big on prepositions of being talked not to and not at, but with. And I thank you.
I second that. And so is there a motion?
I would move approval of the amendments as proposed by Secretary Slater.
I'll second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
The motion carries.
Look forward to seeing the follow-up.
Motion carries 2-1. Thank you very much. I believe there's a motion to take a short break. There are a lot of people here for many, many other items, but we want to thank everybody that came for this. This is, I believe, the most historic vote we've taken in 20 years of the Board of Public Works. We deserve to have at least a bathroom break. So we're gonna resume the schedule in 30 minutes. How about that? We're gonna take a little lunch break and we'll come back with the entire rest of the agenda.